Greetings and salutations to everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I'm the control operator for this, the Limark Technical Net. For 44-plus years, the Limark Technical Net has been doing its thing. Every Sunday night at 8 p.m., we all gather in front of our radios to learn from each other and teach each other and entertain each other and amuse each other. And I thank you once again for joining me this Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we try and do it all over again. Let me drop, and I will give you the usual links. If you would like to reach me via email, that would be either for what we used to call mailbag, for the questions that normally would be asked on the technical net, but if you're not in radio distance and you can't contact the net proper, you can email me with the questions, and if I think they're appropriate, we can entertain them, and you can either listen to them on a internet audio stream or on a archive file of the technical net. Or if you have an expertise in some technical field that's popped up into the news and you'd like to share it with us, or if you would like to offer a TechNet puzzle, we're always looking for TechNet puzzles, they're as rare as hen's teeth, or if you would like me to poke a ball in the shoulder and ask him to take a look at something you saw about space or NASA. Of course, you can contact him directly. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com, but you can contact me by addressing your email to mailbag@ac2gs.com. Also, as I've mentioned repeatedly, every week I kind of cut and paste interesting articles that I've read throughout the week, and I post them on a link page. They're available 24/7 for the foreseeable future, so you don't have to run out and take a look at them right now. They'll be there next week and the week after. You get there by typing into your browser roy.ac2gs.com. We have a chat room. It's relatively quiet these days, but if you're so inclined, you can get there by typing into your browser chat.ac2gs.com. And as I mentioned earlier, there is an internet audio stream of the technical net, and I leave it live for the rest of the week, so you can listen into Glen Oaks if you're not in capable of receiving the radio signal. Get there by typing into your browser technet.ac2gs.com. And I always like to remind people that Mike KC2NJI has an archive site. It's called amateurradio.tv. It has archives of the Limark Technical Net that go as far back as September 2006. A lot of smart people have passed by and given their advice. Some of them have just moved away to other areas, but others have shuffled off this mortal coil, and they're now silent keys, unfortunately. But their wisdom continues to live on in the archives of Mike's website. So avail yourself of it when you have an opportunity. Who knows what you'll learn. Let me drop for a second, and we'll talk about what tonight will give us. Okay. We will ask, as per usual, for questions and comments and topics for discussion. I would prefer if the first few are amateur radio related, since this is an amateur radio repeater and an amateur radio net, but as everyone knows, I will entertain any science or technology-based question posed to the best of my ability. I'll ask you for your first name and your call sign. We'll put it down on a list. Hopefully it'll be a long list. Hopefully it won't be a very, very short list. And we will go down the list one to the other to the other. Hopefully that should take us to about 10:15, and Paul will join us for the SpaceNet report. That should take us to 11 p.m., where I will return, and I will put a cover on everything and snug it up and put a bow on top and wish you well for the coming week. So that's our plans. If the laws of physics remain the same, the repeater doesn't cough up a fur ball, and my shack doesn't cough up a fur ball. So that's the plan. Once again, I am AC2GS, and this is the Limark Technical Net. If anyone has any questions or comments or topics for discussion, please hit that push to talk and ID yourself.
Entering CN, non-ham radio related. Please place me in the appropriate time frame. and I would like to ask Space Report Paul to participate in that discussion too.
Okay, I will put you in one of the lower slots, and if Paul is available to answer your question, I'm sure he will. Anyone else want to put their name down on the list for tonight? Please hit that push to talk. Okay, another quiet night in the New York City metropolitan area. Once again, if anyone has any questions or topics for discussions or comments that they would like to go on the list, since Wes doesn't want to go first, there's certainly an opening. So if anyone is out there with any questions or comments, please hit that push to talk and ID yourselves. Okay, we may have a very, very short technical net tonight, or as per usual, what tends to happen is as the night progresses, people get to their radios or they get a little loquacious and talkative and more subjects get brought up. Well, we'll see what the future brings for us. So apparently, Wes, you're the only person on the list, so I guess we'll go to you right now.
Thank you very much, Dr. Roy. Do we have Paul available?
Yeah, good evening, Wes. We're here as usual. Back to... back.
Okay, thank you.
We're both here.
So, I started a number of emails to Dr. Roy and to Paul, and it was meant from the beginning to be space related, but I had a discussion with paleontologists from Europe, PhD, and the discussion took a little time, and I was pointed at close relation between past and the future, and I want to discuss that with the two people I believe could be very much helpful. So, in space age, understanding the origin of evolution of galaxies, stars, planets, and other cosmological phenomena provided and continue to provide to the people on the Earth important information about their own evolution. So, in 2020, in November, we celebrated 20 years of space, ISS, Space International Station. And a link is available to both of you for that. And then we have a few facts. From space, actually. In September 13, 2023, Virgin Galactic spacecraft traveled 88 kilometers above the Earth to the edge of the space. On the board were two Virgin Galactic pilots and instructor, and three passengers were present, along with the remains of two ancient human relatives that lived hundreds of thousands of years ago in Southern Africa. So in other words, they took the remains, the historical remains of humans from thousands of years ago and put it in space, at least. Those remaining were presented in space. And I wonder if you, Paul, have a little bit more information about that. Paul, please.
Okay. By the way, Roy, did you get this email? I got a bunch of emails from Wes, but I open it up first on my phone, and then I open things up on my tablet. I don't know, maybe it's meant to open up on a computer. It's vast. It's a vast amount of information. It's not like a URL. It's like, you know, it's almost like somebody took a collection of everything that we talk about on the net and they put it into a website and now I wound up with it. But, before I answer that, Roy, did you get all that?
Well, I got a lot of emails from Wesley. He might have skipped one because that doesn't really sound thing that I've gotten. You know, sometimes it's a URL, sometimes it's a list of URLs, Sometimes it's a list of websites and videos and comments interspersed. It differs different times. I don't quite recall an email that kind of fits exactly the description that you gave. So that might have been one that you got that I didn't.
Okay, now I don't remember
which one. So the email was sent today with that link for Stellantis or Virgin Galactic.
An option to click on something else. And I got a
September
message saying,
2023.
Basically, don't go any further. It was like a warning.
And
don't open this. So I guess
the link open.
I guess my virus detection.
From this link. So that was universal.
Warning out.
So they
didn't like something. I'm sure it was probably okay, but I didn't click on it anyway. But yeah, I got the overall view of what you're talking about, Wesley. And
there was Dr. Robin Pickering, geologist.
Yeah, that Virgin Galactic flight
and,
was not long ago. And that's the last of
there
the,
is a whole
the
history
ones
about
with that particular space
human
space
remains
plane.
That went to space.
They're going to be building a bigger one. That one could carry six people, and the new one will carry eight
and,
people.
That would be no
that one, they always sent up.
That Galactic,
one
space off to
employee
lunch
Virgin Galactic
in September
with,
13, 2023.
With paying passengers.
Paul?
And like you said, this time it was three paying passengers. You had a pilot, a co-pilot, of course, they're from Virgin Galactic. And then you had an assistant in the back. I believe that was a woman. She's gone up a number of times. So, yeah, you wind up with three people, and I guess one of the people bought an relics up of something. It looked like they bought a relic up of Lucy, but I can't imagine that being true, that some museum would let that out of their sight even for a second. So, I don't know, maybe DNA or something. But, yeah, that would be Lucy. Let me drop it.
It's a 101. You guys got to organize. Everybody double up over there. This is David Duwadio.
This is fact number one. It's fact, and then it's numbered. Number one, September 13, 2023.
Okay, I'm getting into mod or something. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. That would be Lucy. They discovered that over. That was a over 3 million year old fossil, you know, and they figured out it was like one of the early forms of human, and they knew it was a female, and it was like 3 million years old, and they discovered that in the early 1970s, and at the time. The Beatles' Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds was popular. And who knows what these guys were on when they discovered this, but they said they thought that would be a good name. So they picked that name for Lucy. It's got a history now of not as a Lucy spacecraft, you know, heading out to the Jupiter asteroid belt. They named it after that discovery, you know. So it's a Lucy spacecraft. So if you type in Lucy, you know, science, you're going to get two of them. You're going to get one. One's going to be discovery of this humanoid from 3 million years ago, and the other one's going to be a Lucy spacecraft. So that's probably what that was. That's what I'm guessing was. But, you know, I didn't read through it. It was just all, I don't know, it was all over. It was tough to read, whatever you said. If it was just the URL, it would have been easier. But it looked like a bunch of information in just one page. It was too much to go through. Anyway, back to you. I'll be standing by. WS1.
What time is it?
Paul, can you recognize me?
Yeah, go ahead, Roy. I'm getting into mod or something. AC2GS WS2N.
Okay, I mean, the problem is that when you started that long comment, Wes started his long comment, and he finally stopped about 2 minutes before you stopped. So there was a lot of doubling going on, and then now there are other people who are breaking in and not IDing themselves and telling you about that you're doubling in a weird sort of way. But nevertheless, that wasn't Lucy. That was just a kind of anonymous hominid bones from South Africa. I'm not quite sure how old they were. The report sounded like they were a couple of 100,000 years old, so I'm not quite sure if they're demineralized bones, fossilized bones. It sounded like a big publicity stunt. There's no real reason to carry a bunch of 100 or 200,000 year old bones up into near space and then bring them down, except for publicity's sake, which I think disrespects just about everyone involved in archaeology. So it wasn't Lucy. If they would have dragged up Lucy's bones on that stunt, they would probably have gotten arrested by someone.
Okay, yeah. That's what I pretty much was saying in the beginning. I don't know if that came across. So due to the capture effect, who won, by the way, Roy? Wes or me?
Well, I'm going through All-Star, so I get to listen to both of you reasonably well. So I was sort of trying to listen to two different conversations simultaneously. And then, of course, I got to hear the other people who made their comments as well. So that's the beauty of this All-Star connection. It might quit in the middle of the net, and either you don't hear me or I don't hear you and I have to reset things. But otherwise, I get full duplex.
Question. Yeah, and the other advantage is
I'm sorry, very double.
You are dead full quieting. You know, that's great.
Worry,
great
point number one, you might
okay. Just too much information all over the place. I picked up the Virgin Galactic thing, and by the way, anything that Branson does, Richard Branson, billionaire.
And this
company
event
would definitely be
hyped up at one point in the discussion.
Yeah, and they're only suborbital flights, you know. I mean, it's okay. It's a great achievement, but suborbital, you know. Would you pay $400,000 to go on a suborbital 15-minute flight? I don't think so. Anyway, back to you, Ron.
AC2GS, I certainly wouldn't, but, you know, there are some people who have money to burn. Unfortunately, kind of Wes did it again. He doubled about two-thirds of your conversation was doubled with his. You know, either I got to get you guys on All-Star so you get duplex, or you got to transmit shorter segments so that you know when the other person is stepping all over you. And before we go back to this, someone also called out and said, I have a question. So yeah, hopefully it's appropriate for the subject. What's your question, sir? And ID yourself, please.
Troy, KD2VHD, Jim in Bayport. I'm curious. You seem to have a very interesting ability to hear both sides of these doubles and whatnot. And it sounds very useful, what your functioning is doing. Can you explain how you can hear both sides and whatnot? Because those of us on the simpler side are like kind of perplexed. It seems like you have a good handle on things. Over to you, Roy.
Okay, a short diversion before we go right back to Wesley. Good news, and the bad news is, unfortunately, Limox repeaters are not really optimized for Brooklyn. If anything, they're de-optimized for Brooklyn. Using RF, I'm very dependent upon weekly propagation. Some nights people told me they could barely hear me or I was all noise. I would crank up the output to about 50 watts, and sometimes it would work and sometimes it wouldn't work. And I started to use a linear amplifier, which burnt out one of my antennas, and I don't have that many. So I had to figure out something else. And the repeater crew has built All-Star and into Echolink and such. So I could either use Echolink, which I'd rather not because it has some foibles, or I could use All-Star, which I am using. So I'm not going through either a repeater. I'm going through the Internet in the All-Star node, which then goes into the controllers, which then goes out the repeater transmitters. So because of that, I'm not liable for FM's quirky little lock-on. The strongest signal is the signal you hear. I get to hear every signal. There are some signals I don't hear. When the repeater IDs itself, I don't hear it because they don't channel those types of signals into the All-Star node. So that's how I have full duplex. In the good old days, Dick trained himself, and he had a big enough real estate to be able to put up two antennas far enough apart from each other where it didn't desense his radio, and he would listen to the repeater as he transmitted, and he would accomplish duplex. There's a slight delay, and you kind of have to train yourself to deal with it, because after about 30, 40 milliseconds of delay, it confuses the heck out of most people's brains. But the magic I'm using is an all-star internet connection.
It's an interesting piece of magic for your application, and I understand that the echo effect, I had to deal with that once at work with a silly radio system they implemented, and it's a brain load. But it's remarkable how when everything's all filed up, you sort it all out, and I'm sure there's some skill involved, but you're obviously using some good technology for the purpose. So nicely done. I'll be KT2. BHG, I'm on the side, back to that.
Okay, very good. Yeah, it's full duplex is a very useful thing when you're net control, because you can be a much more sophisticated, better traffic guard for people. You can't cut them off because they don't hear you full duplex. So the perfect thing would be if this was like telephones, where everyone was full duplex and everyone knew when they stepped on each other. But, you know, maybe someday in the future we'll figure some way of accomplishing that. Anyway, thank you, Jim, and let's get back to you, Wesley. Now, Wesley, try and keep the questions and the answers relatively short and check to see that no one's doubling with you. Otherwise, it's just going to happen again and again.
Thank you very much for the advice, gentlemen. So we had human remains in space. I was sure that it was not Lucy, because we have only one example of something that is so completely unique. We go to history, we may say that the universe is 13.784 billion years old. Our Earth is much younger, but still, we're talking about 4.54 billion years. And then if we take percentage at which human species of its of the kind of Lucy is present on the planet Earth, which is 3.2 million years ago, we're talking about 0.07. So 0.07 of the percentage from the calculated from the age of the Earth. So not even 1% that we have a human species here. But there were plenty of different human species, and only one, the kind of Lucy, was taken to the history of modern science as a marking point.
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by one. I mean, she's one member of Australopithecus afarensis. There were a lot of them, and I think we have more than a couple of dozen fossilized samples of that class.
That is correct. But the 3.2 million years old ape Lucy was the first Australopithecus skeleton ever found that is marking our species. So we had humanoids, meat-eating, plant-eating, various of them. They were fighting together, and they were much older. So if we go to the history of the extinctions, we have five of them. And we may say that from half a billion years ago, we're not talking about the history of the Earth, we're talking about half a billion years ago, exactly 444 million years ago, we have a 90% of all species that were ever living on the planet Earth disappearing five times. So that was the end of Ordovician period. Then we had late Devonian, that was 360 million years ago. Then we had Permian, 250, and then we had end of Jurassic, which is 200 million years ago. And then only after that, we could look at eventually the 1 to 2 million years ago when we had the increased number of oxygen in the atmosphere, and eventually plants start to recover. So we could actually say that the last extinction was caused by the asteroid, but as I was explained by the PhD from Europe, it wasn't really like that. The dinosaurs were made genetically to have a need for much more oxygen. And while right now we have a 17% of the oxygen available to us, which makes us feel comfortable, comparing to 38.6% of the oxygen that was at the end of at 3 million years ago, after end of the Cretaceous period. So at that time, the sun was allowed to more penetrate the earth, and then we had the plants to grow. And of course, dinosaurs were not there, but small mammals, and one of the small mammals was the human being, was able to survive. Back to you, Dr. Ray.
Comment? Yeah, Jim, one second. Let me comment, and then I'll certainly let you comment. The way you seem to be presenting it, at least the way it sounds like to me, is it's a fait accompli. That's what happened. What you just mentioned is a theory. There are some evidence to suggest that theory. There are others that don't. So it's a theory, not like science theory, where it's pretty much a known fact, like the theory of relativity or quantum mechanics. It's a postulate. It's a premise. It's a possibility. So it's something that may have happened but may not have. I want to make sure that people listening in don't get the impression that I got that this is actually proven type of thing. Jim, what did you want to say?
I think the word you were looking for was hypothesis. I just wanted to comment that the current reigning wisdom, whatever that is that our our oxygen level is 21% currently for our lifetime that we've been here. It's pretty much recognized. If there's something, an error of that, I don't know about it. However that applies. Back to that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not difficult to measure oxygen levels, so we know how much oxygen is generally in the air, how much nitrogen is in the air, and how much argon. That's the three major gases. Argon's a relatively small percentage. But yeah, you were right. Hypothesis was what I was groping for. So, I mean, it's a possibility. The problem is what some people feel is the population, the fossil records of dinosaurs seem to be getting less and less as the time that the meteor is believed to have fallen approaches. So there was something going wrong before that. Like most things, it's not one thing that screws up planets, but it's a perfect storm of things. There was a situation in the late Bronze Age where all the civilizations just kind of fell in on themselves. And, you know, the ancient Greeks became so backward that they forgot their language. They couldn't read the ancient, the real ancient Greek. So, and that was thought to be due to a volcano, and then it was also thought to be a climate shift, and it's probably three or four things simultaneously happening that caused these terrible disasters. So the same probably is going to be found for the extinction event that killed off the dinosaurs. It wasn't just the meteorites, just the asteroids. It was a couple other things at the same time going terribly wrong.
Comment, WS2N.
Sure, Paul.
Yeah, and what Wesley was describing about the relationship between the universe, how long humans have been walking around. He was trying to, it's not, he was trying to give the percentage. I kind of missed that, but it sounds like that's what he was doing. And if that's so, I don't know if Wesley ever read the book Cosmos by Carl Sagan. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he did, because that thing was published in 140 different languages and many years ago. And he had a topic, one of the chapters, involved the cosmic calendar. And I'm sure you remember this, Roy, too. You know, they laid out the whole calendar on the ground. And he also showed this on the series Cosmos that he had. And the whole calendar, you know, from, you know, was the complete lifespan of the universe, you know, from the Big Bang, and he went through all the different months, and you know, this happened and that happened, and he eventually gets down to the point where, you know, where life started, you know, maybe the last day or so of the cosmic calendar, and he gets down to where human life started, and you know, it was like a tiny dot on the last day of December 31st on the cosmic calendar. It was very well done. He did a great job. So I don't know if you haven't ever read that book. It's got so many great topics in it. I always recommend Cosmos. You know, the book is, I love the book. I know that the series was great too, but the book was just it's just terrific. Back to you, Roy. WS1.
Yeah, I read the book. I watched the series, and I don't know. I think it was something ridiculous, like humanity's only been around for the last, you know, 5 seconds of the whole year.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But you know, whether it's, you know, off by 5 seconds or 5 days, it doesn't matter. It's just the idea that, you know, that how long we've been around compared to, you know, the age of the universe. That was the real point of that whole segment. Very well done.
Yeah, I agree. I think someone wanted to say something. I heard a voice, but I didn't get the ID.
N2GGS, comment.
Yes, sure.
Hey, N2GGS, the name is Stefan, good guy Stefan, and just in time to the university, Museum of Natural History has a banister that goes like from the fourth, the fifth floor, all the way down to the first floor, and they have a handrail. And humanity has been on this earth the last 3 inches of the handrail.
It kind of once again points out what a little blip we are in the universe, in time and space.
Okay, that's my 5 cents. N2GGS.
Okay, thank you, Stefan. I appreciate your participation. Wes?
Okay. Yeah, actually, I wanted to show how short we are, and there's our input on planet Earth, and about our domination of the planet. So we have end of Cretaceous, and you both write, paleontologists, the European paleontologists I've been chatting for a few hours with face-to-face. I was actually rewarded to meet him. He said that quite before that time, the dinosaurs experienced lack of the oxygen. That the climate was already changing, like it is changing right now. And their lungs were not prepared to function, especially eat-meeting animals that has to be very fast, and they were very big. And that actually was one of the things that caused them to die. But the final point was the asteroid. Now, the size of the asteroid is quite questionable, because some of them say that it was the size of Mount Everest, and some of them that was quite smaller. But I got the answer to the question about hypothesis. He says, well, people who are not in given science, they hypothesize different than the people who are exactly in that particular science, because the amount of data available to them is different. It doesn't mean that we scientists, we are always right, but it only means that those people who are not skilled in given art rather tend to believe us, so we have not much room for error. Okay, so if we go to the question, because I have a number of questions, it's not only about evolution, it's about us now. So we know that the space is something that we're researching right now. And we may say, we may hypothesize that finally, at the end of the time, we have a question that will come. Perhaps we were headed for the sixth extinction. That didn't happen yet. But we're currently far from that point. So the question is how far we are from that extinction. But before we go to answer to that, there are a few more things.
Wesley?
Go ahead.
Strictly speaking, dinosaurs are not extinct. Dinosaurs evolved after the extinction event, and all the birds that you see are the descendants of dinosaurs.
That is absolutely correct. I've got the same impression. I asked the same question. The smaller dinosaurs, they are known as the birds today, and if you are the variation from that form, were able to survive because they were smaller, and they, in some areas where sun was still accessible enough, they were able to find the food. But in that group, the most of them that were eat-meeting didn't survive. Not all of them, but most of them. But I wanted to point out something else. Industrial civilization is 200 plus years old. Now, the Earth is much older, which is 5.4 billion years ago. And the age of universe is 13.784. And we have 200 years of industrial civilization. There was a statement that Antonio Guterres, the Secretary General of United Nations, made, but he made that statement only in regards to recent happening. And he was pointing at food catastrophe in the short time projection. So the question that I have sent you in the email is not about the food, but what is the access for food projection for the next 100 years? So I'm not asking about the food, I'm asking about food projection. I remember in 2010, I went to Tbilisi, Georgia. At that time, the population, or total population of the Earth, was around 6 billion people, compared to today. We have a few years just passed by. So we're talking about what? 2 billion people every 10 years? Back to you, Dr. Roy.
Okay, well, you brought up an interesting but very complicated subject on a whole bunch of different levels. Not every country's population is increasing dramatically. China has a big population problem. Japan has a big population problem. South America, doesn't, as far as I'm aware. Europe is kind of in the middle someplace. So there are areas where people are reproducing at semi-upsetting rates, and others where actually the population is turning old because they're reproducing at less than replacement rates. So it depends upon what the planet-wise reproduction rate is, and that's very difficult to predict. It's biological, it's historical, it's cultural, it's sociological, all kinds of things. And you know, the death rate if there's a world war or something. And there's a whole bunch of variables. Everyone sort of got taught in, I guess, high school about Malthusian theory, that you know, Malthus wrote a great book hundreds of years ago that basically we were going to starve ourselves to death because we were going to reproduce too much. Fortunately, no one knew, but in the 70s we had a green revolution where the productivity of agriculture increased dramatically. That has sustained us, and mostly starvation is not a matter of production these days, right now, but of shipping it to the right place so that people who need it get it. So there's a lot of complications to you know, whether or not we'll starve ourselves to death. And you could make predictions and sell a book based on them, like Malthus did, and probably there have been thousands of other guys who made a buck doing that. But you don't know. It's a very, very complicated question. There's a lot of variables that are very difficult to guesstimate what they'll be as time goes on, because we don't know the future.
Okay, I'm fixing it. Well, so the first question that I formulated, which I'm not asking to get an answer for it, was how far we are from the sixth extinction. But I was asking, what is the access to the food projection for the next 100 years? So not about the food. I'm not asking about the food. The projection that could be done and eventually stayed, because every source that I looked at was carefully going around the subject. So I didn't find one single source with the calculator giving me the ability to project. And not even in the scientific sides of it. Dr. Roy.
Again, that's because it's very difficult. There are too many variables that are not predictable. It would be the same as looking up in a scientific research magazine what next week's lottery number is. You're not going to find it because they don't know how to calculate it. So it's the same thing. You can't project 100 years in the future unless you don't really care about any kind of accuracy. If you're just doing it to sell a book, then I'm sure there are guys that you could find books where they tell you numbers that they make up. But in order to have to back up the number with facts requires what's going to happen in the next 100 years. And I have no crystal ball, and neither do these researchers. So I think that's why you lack any source for what the reasonable predictions. You can get unreasonable predictions, I'm sure. I think the problem is you're looking for reasonable predictions, and there's no basis for that. There never was. So when Malthus wrote his book, it was full of nonsense because it was based on the past, not the future.
So human and robotic spacecraft, due to its nature of supporting astronauts in space, contributes to circular economy by improving energy efficiency, automation, robotics, and artificial intelligence, as well as habitation, recycling, waste management, and additive manufacturing, end of quote. So, is this the right answer? And here's the sentence. The space science is supporting humans instead. So we're thinking we are supporting space science. Isn't that the opposite? And then, final question. How do humans learn? Is evolution benefiting from learning, or is benefiting from the process of elimination called natural selection, and how does that apply to the modern human? I've got a beautiful answer. I would like to you to voice that answer, Dr. Roy. And what's your answer?
Okay, well, it sounds like someone wants to be a poet more than a scientist or researcher. I don't know. It's I think any kind of technological stretch provokes discovery. I don't think space in and of itself is brought about robots and artificial intelligence. It spurs it because it offers more reasons and more benefits if we accomplish things. So war can advance technology. Disease can advance technology. Almost any kind of insult or problem that needs to be addressed. So I don't think it's inherent to space. We could have stayed on the Earth, and you know, we'd still have Velcro and Fisher pens and all those other things that some people erroneously think were manifestations of the NASA program. It spurs us to greater heights, but it doesn't, you know, turn the key, if you will. And I don't know if anyone cares to address the concept of evolution. A lot of people tend to get evolution terribly wrong. People kind of humanize evolution as a consciousness striving towards some particular direction. You know, in the old days, there was this great show, Twilight Zone, and they had a guy, they put him in a box, and they turned the dial to plus, and he evolved 100,000 years into the future, and then they turned the dial back, and he devolved into 100,000 years in the past. That isn't what evolution does. Evolution has no inherent directions, has no inherent physical goals. Its manifestation is to allow for the passing of mutated genes that allow for a greater degree of survivability of those genes. So if it seems that more stupid people will maintain the human race, whereas smarter people would probably blow it up, there would be stresses that would provoke evolution to make us idiots. So you got to get evolution right first before you kind of deal with the rest of the poetry.
But this is Joe Biden's America. Joe Biden's America, man.
Okay, quote, evolution is a slow, gradual process that does not possess any inherent goal other than improving an organism's ability to successfully pass on their genetics to future generations. It may improve our survivability if we were too stupid to destroy it ourselves. We may evolve into more deemed weeded creatures for surviving sake. Dr. Roy, the author. I love that, and I do thank you very much for that quote, Dr. Roy. But my understanding is, and I would like to ask you to go deeper into it. Let me jump. Okay, so in the evolution, which was biological evolution, we had some organisms that died out and then eventually passed its genes to another organism that was a little bit better, but that slow process in the period of 1 million years made the drastic effect on that particular species. And now we have a situation at which, due to 200 years of technical revolution, we have so many things that humanity didn't have available before. So now, the question is genetic able to sense the medical adventure? That medical, logical form of interacting with that species organism. There was a note in Scientific American many years ago that I noticed that the way that human being did his natural empty his stomach thousands of years ago and now is much different, and then that actually made changes to the human anatomy and to the human body, and not everything is hunky-dory in it. So my question is, how that impact us right now? Is it that science is right now changing us instead of the natural selection and evolution changing us? Back to you.
Well, I don't quite know how to address it. Evolution is a perpetual process that goes on in the background. It does not have any kind of inherent self-awareness. It has no particular goals it's looking after. It's simply a process by which organisms that survive to reproductive age tend to hold on to the genetic material that gets them the farthest down that particular road. Yeah, I mean, just as an example of how evolution has no particular direction, life began in the oceans and rivers and such, in the water, and slowly animals evolved to live on land. But then some land animals went back into the ocean, like whales and sails and dolphins and such, and evolved back into water living creatures. So, you know, you would kind of consider that as evolution going 180 degrees, which is what evolution is perfectly capable of doing if that evolutionary trend optimizes that species' ability to pass on their genetics.
Okay. The poll, I have something for Paul, because I ask you, Dr. Roy, inbound for blasted from Montana sandstone fossil hunters for the first time have discovered the microscopic soft tissue of Tyrannosaurus rex preserved at almost not change form inside the bone since the dinosaurs died 17 million years ago. And it was in Los Angeles Times, but it was also present in a number of papers, scientific papers. And I believe I have a different question to Paul, but maybe Dr. Roy. You said that that might be contaminated, but the PhD that I spoke to, he said it may as well be not. The only difference is who is looking at it. The housewife dealing normally with the kitchen table, or the biologist or paleontologist, Dr. Roy.
I disagree. Facts are facts. Interpretations of facts are open to different specialties and different people's opinions, so interpretation is possibly different. Facts are facts, so I sort of don't agree. It's true. There is a very, very, very teeny, itsy, bitsy, tiny amount of unfossilized bone that has survived the eons because they require very, very, very specific environments not to be destroyed or to be replaced by mineral deposits that they're encased within. So, you know, it's not a completely zero probability of different, minerals or different things to completely turn into something else. So is it possible that a T-Rex has a small fragment of bone? Yeah. It's probably not strictly bone like you took out of a chicken tomorrow. It's because I think they had to kind of immerse it in acid, and they had to process it to get to that little sample, and it's not a big sample. So is it possible that through millions of years, a few million atoms of bone tissue could have somehow been protected from the environment? Yeah. But the percentage is minuscule. The percentage of bone that fossilizes and we're able to discover is a small, small fraction. 99.99% of all bones have decayed long ago and not fossilized. So, you know, put a couple extra decimal points and maybe that small little fragment. But you're never going to get some kind of thing like the size of a chicken bone that just is, you know, 10 million years old or something, and it's in perfect condition, looks just like a bone you chewed on yesterday. So I think it's possible that it's contaminant. It's kind of early in the study of the sample. But even if it's not, it's not impossible for very small fragments in very limited supplies to last through long time periods.
Ace, it's a Bill.
Yes?
Good evening, Roy. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think you said soft tissue, which is even more remotely crazy, impossible. But again, correct me if I'm wrong.
Wes, was it soft tissue? I thought it was bone. And in the previous version of this, before the T-Rex, it was some kind of iron complex that had basically bonded with the material, blocking it from becoming fossilized. But was it soft tissue you in that report, Wes?
I'm trying to get to, I had a number of articles, one that I can immediately open up, but yes, iron was something that was scientists from North Carolina State University, Montana State University, and they actually made that news, and that was in March 26, 2005. The softish tissue is Los Angeles Times, but of course this is not a scientific journal. That's soft tissue. But of course, if I had an access to a more credible material, I would be more sure that I'm not telling something that is completely wrong. Dr. Ray.
Okay, I mean, like I said, not the mini T-Rex, but the previous example was some bits of matter that had been chelated with iron sources and had to go through a whole bunch of chemical processes, which I think they thought had originally been some kind of non-fossilized tissue. And I don't know if anyone finally, everyone agreed upon whether that was really just artifact or not. But, it's a weird world we live in. I assume it's possible if you're going to kind of limit it to a minuscule fragment under very, very specific, bizarre conditions to have it not mineralize. You know, other chemical processes can take precedence, I would think. Don't you, Jeff?
AC to Bill. Well, of course, the chemistry is unlimited, and the possibilities are unlimited, and the probabilities are finite and minute if you're talking about soft tissues. That's my opinion. I'm not a geologist. But I am a biologist, and I know what happens to biological matter when you treat it that way. But, you know, we have all kinds of mistakes and frauds and everything else like that, and hopeful interpretations. So I think I chalk this one up to something probably similar.
I'm Joe Biden, and I approve his message.
Okay, you know, I mean, I understand where you're coming from. You know, I always want to kind of leave a little bit of a wiggle room out there because we're always discovering things. We're always learning things. I don't want people to walk away in any way thinking that, you know, someone found basically half of a chicken. that's 10 million years old, you know, when they say that there's. They discovered some non-fossilized material. When it comes to these guys, it could be something that's a fraction of...